You are now tuned into the Truth Frequency.
We are TFR. TFR.
Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to your daily dose of deprogramming. It is the first day of December, and it is Monday, or as I like to call it, the first day of the hostage situation. My name's JD. We are live. As I said, it's Monday. We are live every day, Monday through Friday, from 10 o'clock Central until noon Central. And what we do here at Red Pill Reports is try and keep you guys up to date on the most current news, and then we always fill the second hour with the most interesting guests that we can possibly track down on the planet. Today will be no exception. First of all, I hope everybody had a wonderful holiday out there. I hope you guys had a great Thanksgiving, got to spend some time with some friends and some family out there. I don't want anybody to be jealous, but I will go ahead and say that it was 70 degrees here on Saturday. 70 degrees. It was absolutely as perfect as it could possibly have been. It is overwhelming. And as they say about Missouri, if you don't like the weather, just wait a few minutes. It's 25 degrees outside right now, which means I'm not leaving the house ever again. And to be honest, also, there's no snow, and I'm one of these people that if it's going to be cold, it needs to snow, because a snow is the only thing that makes cold worthwhile, in my opinion, because then it adds a touch of prettiness to everything. Cold by itself, I have a lot of trouble focusing on the prettiness there. So anyway, hope everybody had a great weekend. Boulevard and I hung out. We had some major turkey go down on Thursday, obviously, and had a great discussion with Chris Geo on Friday. I hope all of you guys got to tune in for that. I would like to also mention today is our 1 month anniversary. We have done it, ladies and gentlemen. We have managed to stay on the air for a month and haven't gotten enough nasty emails for them to boot us off the air yet. Actually, we haven't gotten any. So to all of you guys out there who have tuned in on a daily basis, we couldn't do it without you, and we really, really do appreciate you guys being here. It's kind of a monumental achievement for all of us to have made it through our first month, and we look forward to many, many, many more months here at Truth Frequency, and I hope that all of you are supporting the network and supporting the other hosts. We couldn't do it without them, and we couldn't do it without you, so I definitely want to appreciate and tell all of you how much I appreciate you guys being here. Let you guys know, at the 11 o'clock hour today, we are going to be joined by Mr. Kenneth Shortgen Jr. Now, he is a contributor to the Daily Economist, and he's also a contributor to Rogue Money, where our good friend V the Gorilla Economist also hangs his shingle out there. So we're going to be discussing some of the economic stuff, and I don't know if you guys have been paying attention this weekend, but while you guys were eating turkey, my goodness, there have been a lot of things going on. The oil markets tumbled over the weekend. We were looking at oil at about $66 the last time I checked. After the OPEC announcement on Thursday that they would not cut production to raise the costs. So we're going to be talking about that a little bit with Ken Shortgen today. Probably get into the Swiss referendum, which was also held yesterday. They were going to essentially increase their gold reserve holdings by a very significant amount, and that measure failed. Spectacularly failed, actually. So we're going to talk about that and what some of those implications are. Another major piece of news coming out of the economic sector just over the weekend, many people might have missed it, but the Ukraine and by the Ukraine, I mean NATO, and by NATO, I mean the United States, has essentially come out and said they are planning to nationalize all of Russia's oil lines in the eastern part of Ukraine. Wow, that is a huge, huge development over there, and obviously is going to cause quite a bit more turmoil in that whole geographic area there. So we're going to talk to Ken about that as well, and probably talk a little bit about the immigration agenda as an economic tool. I think there's some correlations that need to be made there. So do stick with us at 11 o'clock, guys. It's going to be a very interesting conversation for sure. And then tomorrow at 11 o'clock, Doreen Hannes is going to join us again, and we'll get her for the full hour this time. So we'll get into some of your individual land rights and some of the things, the threats that are happening around us that are making it more difficult to become self-sustaining and self-sufficient, which is obviously the goal of so many people who listen to the Red Pill Reports. So we're going to have that discussion also. I want to mention, too, this weekend I got finished with a book for our guest on Friday, Elena Freeland. Oh, my goodness, ladies and gentlemen. You think you guys know about chemtrails and HARP? Yes, we've talked Dane Wigington a few times, and he is wonderful, and we talk quite a bit about the implications of this. But she, Elena Freeland, has gone into the military side and talking about how all of this weather technology has been weaponized. It was a frightening read, and she'll be joining us at 11 o'clock on Friday. So I promise you, this week is going to be a very, very good week. You guys will want to stay tuned all week. There'll be some other guests that we'll talk about for Wednesday and Thursday. But I do want to get into the news quickly, because, as I mentioned, so much is going on right now in the crazy world that we live in. And so let's just dive right in. Right now, there has been a new report from Deutsche Welles, which is an international broadcaster in Germany. And they're probably one of the first, if not the first, national broadcaster in the Western front to admit that the so-called Islamic State is being supplied not by black market oil and not by hostage ransoms, but by billions of dollars worth of supplies carried into Syria across NATO member Turkey's border via hundreds of trucks a day. And this isn't just a written report. This is actually a video report. And you can look for that again if you go to, I should have mentioned this earlier, but if you go to redpillreports.com and check out the show section, which is always the first section there at the top, you can follow along with all of these articles. As I have said in the past, it's always difficult for me to get through all of these articles, so it's a good way for you to go and kind of follow along and see what's going on in the world. But you can find this report, which is titled IS Supply Chain Channels Through Turkey. And that report definitely confirms what has been reported by geopolitical analysts since at least as early as 2011, that NATO member Turkey has allowed torrents in supplies, fighters, and weapons to cross its borders unopposed to resupply ISIS positions inside of Syria. It's a very long article, and it's written by Activist Post, and I definitely recommend everybody go check it out. But with the documented conspiracy of the U.S. and its allies to create a sectarian mercenary force aligned with al-Qaeda, the so-called moderate rebels the U.S. has openly backed in Syria are now fully revealed as sectarian extremists. And now with the DW documentation in this video, they're showing a torrent of supplies originating in Turkey. It's very clear now that the ISIS menace that NATO poses as the solution to was in fact NATO itself all along. And what is revealed is a foreign policy so staggeringly insidious, few are able to actually believe it, even with international broadcasters like DW showing ISIS supply lines leading from NATO territory itself. So very difficult at this point to separate NATO from ISIS at this point. And Germany probably going way above and beyond what anybody else is going to do to report that. So that's very interesting, and more fuel for the fire coming out of Germany now. I got in an interesting discussion this weekend about MH370. I won't go into it right now, but I got into an interesting discussion with MH370, and I had to go back and redo a whole bunch of research on that, and I still believe that plane was stolen. Anyway, moving on from that, Malaysia is actually going to be excluded from the MH17 probe. Why, you might ask? Why would Malaysia be excluded from the probe into one of their planes potentially being shot down over Ukraine? Well, it's because they took a neutral position, essentially. So the country that owned the shot down MH17 jet which was carrying a number of Malaysian citizens and was flown by a Malaysian crew, has now been excluded from the criminal investigation due to its political neutrality, according to the nation's media. Malaysia has been left out of the joint investigation team, which has been tasked with learning more about the details of the tragedy which took place over Ukraine in July. This is despite the Dutch Prime Minister stating the importance of Malaysia's cooperation during a visit to the country last month, and the JIT includes the Netherlands, Belgium, Ukraine, and Australia. There's been some interesting comments also coming from one of the doctors at Kuala Lumpur University. He goes on to say that when the crash happened, Malaysia didn't blame any parties. They didn't blame Russia or the Ukraine. All they said was that they'd like to have a look at the concrete evidence. And unlike Western counterparts, Malaysia has always taken a neutral role and not pointed fingers at Russia. So they're going on to say, but it's because they didn't point fingers at Russia that they're essentially being excluded. But what's really interesting about this is that Kiev, who is a possible suspect in the investigation, as it has been confirmed to possess weapons of capable reaching altitude that the MH17 was flying at when it was allegedly hit. So the fact that Ukraine is being included in the JIT, obviously, on a side note, represents a huge conflict of interest, right? We're essentially letting the fox guard the hen house in this particular situation. And Malaysia not happy right now that they've been excluded from this investigation. Just obviously, it needs to be said that by excluding them, it's very easy to see that the quality of the information coming out of the investigatory team is going to be one-sided. So we'll probably get more information about that moving forward. Let's move on to a Press TV article. The U.S. Department of Defense is now planning to arm Israel with 3,000 smart bombs. U.S. Will arm Israel, a key ally in the Middle East, with 3,000 smart bombs as part of Washington's military aid to Tel Aviv. The DOD announced the funding for the sale will come from the military package and will be paid until the end of November of next year. The United States right now provides Israel with some $8.5 million in military aid every day. Cost of the deal is estimated at $82 million, through which the Israeli Air Force will receive thousands of the GDAM model bombs. The U.S. military aid to Israel has obviously prompted several demonstrations across the country against such deals. The Israeli Air Force actually used smart bombs in its latest war against the Gaza Strip, and the besieged strip has witnessed three destructive wars since 2008. During the last one, more than 2,100 Palestinians, over 570 children were killed, and at least 11,000 others were injured. Dozens of Israelis were also killed in the war. So looks like we are still planning on providing weapons to Israel. This is following on the heels of Britain saying that they were going to take a closer look at some of their contracts with Israel before providing more weapons to them. So maybe the United States isn't quite on the fence as much as we had suspected. The Palestinians will never recognize Israel as a Jewish state, according to President Mohammed Abbas. He said at an emergency session of the Arab League, which obviously is a counter to Benjamin Netanyahu's approving a disputed bill to enshrine Israel's status as a Jewish state just last week. The statement reported by Israel's Channel 10 followed warnings that if the United Nations fails to adopt a resolution that would recognize Palestinian statehood and make Israel cease building settlements on Palestinian land, the Palestinian Authority would go ahead with seeking membership in the International Criminal Court with the intention of prosecuting. And now Abbas is threatening all security relations with Israel will be cut unless peace negotiations that collapsed back in April are revived. The Arab foreign ministers in Cairo are behind him seeking Israel's withdrawal beyond the pre-1967 lines, as well as the establishment of an independent Palestinian state. Will we see that happen? Probably not. But back in August, Palestine announced that it would be asking the UN Security Council for a timetable for Israeli withdrawal from the Gaza Strip and the West Bank, warning that denying the request would end in them looking to put Israel on trial for the killing of thousands of Palestinian civilians. In October, the UN proposed a timeline of November of 2016. Coincidentally, the same date that we will be providing them with their smart bombs up until. Fantastic. Isn't it fun when a plan comes together? Pardon me. The Pope has come out and branded the ISIS violence in Syria and Iraq grave sins against God. So at least the one guy on the planet with some sort of moral, I don't know, I'm not even going to go there, guys. That's what the Pope said. You guys can take that as you want to. I'm not even going to go there. Let's see here. Gunmen set off three bombs and opened fire on worshippers at the main mosque in North Nigeria's biggest city, Kano, on Friday, killing at least 81 people, witnesses and officials said, in an attack that bore the hallmarks of the Islamist Boko Haram militants. Boko Haram obviously is a Sunni jihadist movement which is fighting to revive medieval Islamic caliphate in northern Nigeria and regards the traditional Islamic religious authorities in Nigeria with disdain. So a large blast coordinated assault carried out on Friday in Nigeria at the behest at Boko Haram, obviously part of Africa's ISIS issue. Let's see. The UK police force have accidentally admitted that it spied on some journalists who hadn't actually done anything wrong, and they did this by using the anti-terror RIPA laws. And then they kind of came back to the paper and said, hey, could you delete that article? Because we didn't really mean to tell everybody that we were doing that. But that is actually what they did. The Cleveland police erroneously sent information to industry paper The Press Gazette, indicating that it had used the Regulation of Investigatory Powers Act, or RIPA, to obtain telecom data while searching for journalists' sources, said the Press Gazette. And asked the publication to delete the documents when they realized that they probably didn't want the Press Gazette to have them. So the RIPA, which regulates how authorities can intercept and monitor communications, is currently under increased scrutiny as it has emerged that at least four other UK police forces have used it to seize telecommunications data while hunting for journalists' sources. The journalists affected have not been accused of any criminal wrongdoing, which obviously means the application of the RIPA against them, probably not lawful, probably not good, which is probably why they want to cover it up after they accidentally admitted it. Too late. Cat's out of the bag. Sorry, guys. The Swiss voters, we're going to talk economically here in just a second about them not going through on the gold referendum, but there was also another referendum that the Swiss voted against this weekend to dramatically slash immigration. There was a call to dramatically slash immigration levels inside of Switzerland, and according to early results by the polling published by the broadcaster RTS, showed that 74% of Swiss voters turned down the anti-immigration initiative by Ecopop. And the organization had ambitious plans to cap immigration growth at 0.2% of the population, which would only allow 16,000 new immigrants to settle into the country annually. Currently, right now, Switzerland allows 80,000 immigrants into the country annually. So they have decided against curtailing immigration into Switzerland. We'll also go in a few minutes, get into the economic stuff and talk a little bit about the gold referendum. But another interesting story coming out of Germany right now. German authorities had to evacuate 17,000 residents of the city of Dortmund on Sunday after the discovery of an old, unexploded 1.8-ton aviation bomb. The device was dropped by the Allies over the industrial Ruhr region during the war and was found when experts analyzed old aerial photos of the area. It was located at a group of a pump manufacturer in the city's Horde district, and the evacuation was a precaution necessary before the old ordnance could be defused, since the explosive force of such a device is several times more powerful than the force of conventional bombs. The defusing took place around noon, and it took about 1,000 experts to get it done. I guess it's not necessarily a rare thing to find old bombs and shells in Germany, but they are very rarely the size of this one. So we are glad that nobody was hurt. But 17,000 evacuated over the weekend after the discovery of a large bomb. Just absolutely insane. Okay, I'm going to move into some national news right now. And I realize a lot of people are still talking about Ferguson. And I hate to be the guy beating a dead horse here, but something came across my news plate this weekend that I found was kind of interesting. Has to do with Mr. Darren Wilson. According to officials interviewed by the Washington Post, Mr. Wilson became a cop back in 2009 when he joined a nearly all-white 45-member task force that patrolled a small town in Missouri called Jennings. The Washington Post summarized this department as, quote-unquote, not an ideal place to learn how to police. The tiny, impoverished city of 14,000 was 89% African American, with a disproportionate number of Caucasian officers like Wilson. Perhaps most importantly, in terms of relevance to this case, the police department had been accused of using excessive force against residents in a disturbing number of incidents. And I'm not going to go through all of the incidents here, but there are several. And eventually what happened in 2011 by a city council vote of 6-1, they fired every single officer in the department, and they opted to hire a completely new set of cops that they felt would not be brutal or discriminatory. And one of those officers fired was, yes, ladies and gentlemen, Officer Darren Wilson. So there you go. He has now come out and resigned from the police force, which is sort of interesting. He's pretending, I imagine, that he has resigned, but he has been told very specifically that his continued employment may put residents and police officers of the city of Ferguson at risk, which he's saying is circumstances he cannot allow. So he's obviously going to be removed from force and is taking it upon himself to do that to himself. Should he be let go or whatever, I don't know what's going to happen. There's obviously still a federal investigation by the Justice Department going on, and he still may face a civil lawsuit from the Brown family, but at least he won't be a police officer here anymore. We will, this is another one of these reasons I want to see this National Police Registry Act, because just the question of whether he did something wrong or not, he should be on a list. He shouldn't be allowed to be a cop anymore, especially after being disbanded from another police department in Jennings. Just crazy. And then according to Raw Story, the NYPD actually gathered intel on professional agitators in Ferguson when they were preparing for the chokehold death decision. I don't know if a lot of you guys remember, but back in July, Eric Gardner went into cardiac arrest and died after the police placed him in a chokehold for allegedly selling illegal cigarettes. There was a major video that went out. It was, happened on Staten Island in New York. But what's interesting about this is that the NYPD, because they were concerned about whether or not Officer Pantaleo would face criminal charges for his role in Gardner's death, the police commissioner wanted to make sure that the violence that accompanied the release in Missouri's grand jury decision did not spill over into NYPD, in the NYPD area itself. So what they did is they sent investigators, detectives, to Ferguson to learn about the tactics of quote-unquote professional agitators. Okay, what are these professional agitators known to do? Well, these are the kind of people who are known to record officers performing routine stops and posting the videos on YouTube. You guys can't see me, but I'm air quoting all of this right now. That's what a professional agitator is, somebody who is attempting to keep the police accountable, according to the NYPD. I'll stop air quoting now, but my goodness, wanted to know about the professional agitators in Ferguson, Missouri. Oh my gosh. Okay, let's move on. Friday, huge, huge story coming out of Friday. Nobody talked about this, and it blew my mind that this didn't even make it to Drudge. Okay, so Friday morning, Austin, Texas, about 20 minutes to 3, so 2:40 in the morning, a lone gunman, a white male, 49 years old, shows up downtown Austin and starts shooting his semi-automatic, if not a fully automatic rifle. If you listen to the sounds, it's difficult to say because there's a video about this. Started shooting at the federal building, at the Austin Police Department, and tried to burn down the Mexican consulate. Okay, so guy shows up, as I said, about 2:30 in the morning, starts shooting at the police department. There happened to be a police officer there on duty who was putting the horses to bed for the night, and he opened fire on this gentleman. His name is Stephen McWilliams. The guy, as I said, was the shooter. The police officer opened fire on him and put him down right there on the pavement. No indication right now as to whether or not he shot himself or the cop shot him. Most likely the cop probably shot him. But then they started checking him out, checking his vehicle out. At first there was some indications that he might have had an explosive vest on, but it turns out that that was not true, although he did have a number of small green canisters, the kind that are used for portable barbecue grills, and he actually tried to use them to light the Mexican consulate on fire. But why is this story important? It's important because it's not being covered. that's what blows my mind about this. I mean, I saw this and I was like, okay, false flag. Here we go. We got a white guy who's obviously disgruntled with the government, probably anti-agenda since he's trying to burn, or anti-immigration agenda, pardon me, because he's trying to burn down the Mexican consulate. Nowhere on the news all weekend. I mean, I had to dig for this story, which means to me, this was absolutely a real event. This was not a staged event. This was not a nurtured event. This is something that they were not prepared to deal with. And I think that's why we haven't seen any stories really about it, because they don't know how to spin it, which is, again, surprising to me, because this to me seems like this would be exactly the kind of story that they would want to cover right now. I mean, how much easier would it be to make white middle class, you know, anti-government Americans look bad by, other than just showing a video of one of them on TV trying to burn a Mexican consulate down? But you don't see those videos, which makes me believe this was not a nurtured event. But that did happen in Texas this weekend. Everything crazy going on in Texas this weekend. Let me tell you, there was a road rage incident that happened in Texas. This is disgusting. An innocent woman has been shot in the head over a driver with road rage incident after he fired on her with a gun. Who was the driver? Well, he was Deputy Kenneth Kaplan being charged for the shooting. Yeah, that's right. He was a police officer. So he's driving down the road. This woman gets cut off by him. She decides she didn't really want to be cut off by him, so she honks her horn at him and speeds past him. Maybe not the best thing to do to a cop, but she at that point thought, eh, probably okay, right? Except for the fact that he is now speeding up alongside her, and this time he has his gun out, okay? She leans her head back at literally the most miraculous time that she could do it, because as she leaned her head back, the bullet grazed her skull. So this cop, in a road rage incident in Texas, tried to shoot this woman in the head and missed. Unbelievable. And now, what is this guy going to get, off probably? You know, is he going to get a little, free time, a little paid vacation action? He's only been charged right now with aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. So now we're avoiding the charge of attempted murder. And, oh my gosh. Texas, what is going on, guys, down there? We got to go to a 3-minute break. We're going to come back. I got more news out of Texas. Some other crazy stuff about the IRS. Then we'll get into the economy, get into some health news. Keep with us here, guys. 3-minute break. This is your daily dose of deprogramming. My name is JD. Thanks for being here, guys. We'll be right back.
So, you want the news and information without the hate, the hype, the fear? Well, you've come to the right place. You can support True Frequency Radio by spreading the word on social networking sites like Facebook, Twitter, or your favorite forums. Want to take True Frequency Radio on the road? Listen on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or other mobile devices. Want more than just the free stuff? Sign up for a VIP membership for as little as $4 a month and get super high-quality downloads, member-only content, and instant access to your favorite shows without the wait. It's only through your loving support that we're able to cover the cost and continue broadcasting. So now, stay tuned for more Free Speech Radio right here on the Truth Frequency Radio Network. KTFRN, worldwide.
Here at MyPatriotSupply.com, our customers are number one. Built on a self-sustaining business model, we don't owe our existence to big banks or big business. Instead, the company was built by you, the customer. The success of My Patriot Supply is a testimony to the loyalty and dedication of each and every one of you, to our old-fashioned values and top-rated customer service. These elements alone have made us the number one choice of patriots everywhere. We believe that being prepared should not be a luxury reserved by people with large disposable incomes, which is why we have the products you need at the prices you can afford. We bring you our Patriot Pantry brand of storable food, which features top-of-the-line flavors and carefully packed to store for 25 years. Plus water purification systems, non-GMO heirloom seeds, survival gear, and much, much more. Visit MyPatriotSupply.com or call 866-229-0927. That's 866-229-0927. MyPatriotSupply.com.
nutritious food is real body armor. It builds muscle, burns fat, improves digestion, and feeds the entire body the nutrients it needs. Did you know the U.S. government banned the hemp plant from growing in the United States and classified it as a Schedule 1 drug to hide it behind the marijuana plant? People have been confused about this plant for over 80 years, and many still don't know what hemp is. So now you know hemp is not marijuana, and marijuana is not hemp. They are different varieties of the same species. HempUSA.org wants the world to know these basic facts and to help people understand that hemp protein powder is the best-kept health secret you need to know about. Remember, hemp protein powder contains 53% protein, is gluten-free, anti-inflammatory, non-GMO, and is loaded with nutrients. Call 888-910-4367, 888-910-4367, and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at HempUSA.org.
Saturdays and Sundays on Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. That was a quick 3-minute break. I appreciate you guys sticking with us through that. This is your Daily Dose of Reprogramming, and I appreciate you guys kicking it with us today. I have to mention one other thing about this ridiculous shooting that happened in Houston. Probably a couple other things, actually. First of all, if you're just tuning into the show, we were just talking about a story that occurred over the weekend in Houston where a woman was essentially in a road rage incident with a deputy. And the deputy took a shot at her head, and she just barely missed being killed by this man. According to the doctors, it is a 1 in a million chance that she survived this. And what is also interesting is that the officer fled the scene after the shooting. So not only has he not been charged with fleeing the scene, but he has only been charged with aggravated assault with a deadly weapon so far. He is right now currently being held in jail, can be released on a $200,000 bond. And, of course, whether he gets paid time off or an actual conviction will remain to be seen. I wouldn't hold my breath if I were you out there. So Houston, Texas, as well as Austin, Texas, going crazy this weekend. I do not know what's going on. And then Brownville, Texas, also in the news as a Texas border man came close to having his Thanksgiving dinner in a jail cell after federal agents caught him allegedly trying to smuggle more than $250,000 in cash into Mexico. Agents with the U.S. Customs and Border Protection arrested 23-year-old Hipolito Garcia Jr. at the Brownsville Matamoros International Bridge after finding more than $250,000 in undeclared cash hidden inside of his 2007 Volkswagen Jetta. Drug cartels obviously use individuals to smuggle their illegal proceeds from the U.S. to Mexico, and is not uncommon to find multiple individuals bringing in cash bundles on a regular basis. But Garcia had been driving from Brownsville to Mexico when federal agents at a bridge sent him to a secondary inspection area, and after getting the vehicle x-rayed, found two tightly packed bundles of cash inside the car. Garcia refused to speak to federal agents during the questioning, and a U.S. magistrate judge formally charged Garcia with cash smuggling, set his bond at $50,000 with a cash deposit of $5,000, and after posting bond, federal agents released him until his future court hearings, giving him the opportunity to celebrate Thanksgiving outside of a jail cell, which is great. And I guarantee you that if you are a drug mule working for a cartel in Mexico and you get caught and lose $250,000 in cash, probably safe to say Mr. Garcia will not be at his hearing, and probably also safe to say that will be the last Thanksgiving that that man has. Just speculation there, but I know that those guys in the old cartels, they're pretty serious about their money, and they probably don't like losing $250,000 in cash to the United States. So, moving on, here's a Washington Times article that came across the Post this weekend. The Internal Revenue Service may have given thousands of confidential filings from private taxpayers to the White House to review, according to a lawsuit against the Treasury Department. The suit filed against the Treasury's Inspector General by Cause of Action, which is a legal advocacy outfit, reveals a steady stream of communications went on between the White House and the IRS, and a potentially improper stream, according to the group. And the Treasury Inspector General for Tax Administration informed Cause of Action that there exist nearly 2,500 potentially confidential documents relating to investigations of improper disclosures by confidential taxpayer information by the IRS to the White House. So more impropriety coming out from the White House right now. Still no indication of what's been dug up out of those 30,000 missing Lois Lerner emails, and I wonder if we'll have that hit the news. I know this Ferguson thing has kept people pretty preoccupied. And I'm going to include this story also only because it's kind of a good news story at the end, but ridiculous at the same time. So this happened in Michigan just over the weekend. African-American male stopped by a Michigan cop who, I have to admit, was a white guy. Because what was this African-American male doing in Michigan, ladies and gentlemen? He was walking down the streets and he had his hands in his pockets. Yeah, that's it. Out for a walk on a cold day in Michigan, stopped by a police officer after a caller reported that he looked suspicious because he had his hands in his pockets. So, Brendan B. Wax McKean is the name of the gentleman who was stopped by the law enforcement officer, and he put this video on Facebook. And you can, as I mentioned earlier, go to redpillreports.com and dig down into the show link for today. You'll find all of these news articles and you can actually find this video. But the video actually isn't that bad, because the officer obviously comes and talks to the gentleman and has to say, you know, we got a report because you were making people nervous. And so the guy's like, how was I making people nervous? He says, well, you got your hands in your pockets. But at the end, he essentially, McKean, says, listen, you know, it's Michigan, brother. It is cold outside. There's probably 10,000 people here in Pontiac right now walking around with their hands in their pockets. And the police officer finally kind of says, yeah, I'm really kind of upset that I'm out here in the cold. This is kind of a ridiculous situation. And essentially, you know, I'm just doing my job. But if you had called, I would have come to check out somebody else. But at the end of the day, this is stupid. And they end up high-fiving at the end as they both realize the ridiculousness of the society that we do live in now. And so that's going on. That happened in Michigan this weekend. But nobody got shot, so that's good, I guess. You know, hey. And the Anonymous, the big hacktivist group, has now posted the KKK leader's personal data online in the ongoing war over Ferguson. So hacktivists aligned with the Anonymous movement have published credit card numbers and other personal information allegedly belonging to the leading KKK member amidst a ongoing grudge between the groups fueled by recent protests in Ferguson, Missouri. Members of the Loose-Knit Hacktivist Collective have taken aim at the Klan in recent weeks after the KKK threatened to use lethal force against demonstrators descending on Ferguson to protest the August 9th killing of unarmed teenager Michael Brown by local police officer Darren Wilson. The feud between the two groups has only escalated in the days since, though, and now Anons are circulating what they claim to be sensitive details about a powerful Klansman and his family through a Twitter account formerly associated with the KKK but compromised by Anons earlier this month. Hacktivists posted on Wednesday this week a trove of data purported to pertain to Frank Ancona, who is the self-described imperial wizard of the Missouri-based traditionalist American Knights of the KKK. The Twitter post was actually quite cute. It just said, we'll just leave this here. And they left essentially a link to two different documents containing data alleged to be Ancona's home address, social security number, and credit card details, social media profiles, tax records, and information on his family. So, Anonymous taking the fight to the KKK. Anonymous goes on to say that the KKK is actually a terrorist group, and the blood of thousands of human beings are on the hands of the Klansmen. And in most of the Anonymous members' eyes, the KKK no longer has the right to express their racist or bigoted opinions. So that is what is going on in Ferguson right now. That is pretty much everything I have to say about Ferguson. So we are going to move on to some economic news right now. Let's check out what the market is doing. Down about 35 points so far for morning trading. Gold, woo! Gold took a big dive, as did silver, over the weekend, and now gold is back up another $20, almost back up to the $1,200 mark. We're sitting at $1,196 right now for an ounce of gold. Silver following suit up almost 5% today to 16 29 after being down in the mid 14s over the weekend. I know a lot of people were gearing up to go and purchase silver this weekend, and interesting that that spot price bounced way back. Crude oil right now trading down below $70 a barrel. We saw 65 over the weekend. We're right now up about 2%, 67.57. Obviously, there is a lot going on with the oil market. One of the things that I read this weekend suggested that the suppression of oil has less to do with Saudi Arabia's desire to crush Iran and to affect Russia and Venezuela, but it has a lot more to do with the number one threat to Saudi Arabia, which currently right now is ISIS. And so there are some people out there who believe that the suppression of oil prices are designed to take some money away from the funding mechanisms of ISIS. Now, of course, we just had a story about NATO ostensibly supplying weapons to ISIS through Turkey, according to that German media. So who really knows? We're going to talk again, as I mentioned, in about 20 minutes. We're going to be speaking with Ken Shortkin Jr., and one of the things we'll definitely be talking about is the correlation between metal prices and other commodities like oil, and how some of this is unfolding into some major geopolitical type events here. Let's see here. Weekend holiday retail spending down significantly, 11%. It fell down, which is the second straight annual decline, according to the main industry trade group. A sign that flashy discounts during the four-day shopping bonanza weren't enough to prompt increased sales. Now, this is a really remarkably, terrifically, and hysterically funny story, and I'm going to get to the really funny part here in just a second. But what they're saying, ladies and gentlemen, is that retail sales way down over the weekend, okay? Everybody expected retail sales to be super high, down 11%. Also, shoppers individually spent an average of $380, which is also down about 6.4% from $407 last year. So what's doing this? Why do we see this? Well, Matt Shea, who is the NRF CEO, he attributed the drop of retail sales to a combination of factors, including the fact that retailers, this is their first thing here, guys, retailers moved promotions earlier this year in an attempt to get people out sooner and avoid what happened last year when people didn't get to finish their shopping because of bad weather. So number one reason, according to Matt Shea, is that the holiday season shopping was spread a little too thin. It was spread out over too many days. So, you know, some money was made Thursday, some money was made Wednesday, and we're not taking that into account. Hogwash is what I'm saying to that. He also then goes on to say he attributes this decline to better online offerings and, listen to this, an improved economy. Okay, he's saying right now, this improved economy has led to a situation where people don't feel the same psychological need to rush out and get that great deal, that weekend deal, particularly if they expected to get more deals. So what they're saying right now, ladies and gentlemen, is the reason that we all didn't go out and spend a whole bunch of money this weekend is because we all have too much money. That's exactly what they're saying, because we all have enough money now, so we're not as psychologically motivated to go out and save money. Wow. Unbelievable. We'll talk to Ken about that in a few minutes too, because I think that is about the silliest thing, I think I've ever heard in my entire life. Gun sales had a huge Black Friday, contrary to the national media saying that everything is down 11%. They had more than 144,000 background checks that will need to be performed after the Friday sales. So these apparently the FBI was getting three requests a second, which is three times the daily average, and some 600 FBI and contract call center employees are now going to be work 17-hour workdays, yay, to complete the background checks in 3 business days as required by law. So on average, more than 500 gun background checks a day fail because of incomplete information required for the decision, which is obviously the FBI's National Instant Criminal Background Check System. But right now, they are averaging 3 checks a second. That is huge. Gun sales, absolutely astronomical over the weekend. Could it have anything to do with Ferguson? I have no idea. Ponzi scheme being reported now. Well, we all kind of already knew that the government's monetary policy was a Ponzi scheme. But the Daily Treasury statement that was released Wednesday, right before everybody was enjoying their Thanksgiving, revealed that the U.S. Treasury had been forced to issue over $1 trillion in new debt just since the fiscal beginning of 2015, only a mere 8 weeks ago, in order to pay off in order to raise the money to pay off Treasury securities that were maturing and to cover new deficit spending by the government. So the only way that the Treasury could handle the $942 trillion in old debt that matured during this period, plus finance the new deficit spending the government engaged in, was to roll over the old debt into new debt and then issue enough additional new debt to cover the new deficit spending. This mode of financing the federal government resembles what the SEC, or Security and Exchange Commission, might call a Ponzi scheme, which they go on to define as an investment fraud that involves the payment of purported returns to existing investors from funds contributed by new investors. So if you, I mean, the SEC is essentially saying that just what just happened at the Treasury is another continuation of the Ponzi scheme that we call the fractional reserve lending and the American dollar. Great time. So happy to be a part of it all. Codelco right now is seeing copper prices staying about $3 in 2015. They've been up and down as low as $2.85 and as high as $4.50 a pound back in February. This makes me want to remind people to save your pennies. And by the pennies, I mean the ones that are 1982 and before, because they are 95% copper. It takes 150 pennies to make a pound. And if a pound of copper is worth $3, that means your penny is worth, what does that mean? Your penny is worth $1.50? No. It means it's worth more than a penny, people. I was told there wouldn't be any math involved here. But what I'm saying is it takes 150 pennies. It takes $1.50's worth of pennies, old pennies, to make $3 worth of copper. That's what I'm saying. So your pennies are worth 2 pennies if they're pre-82. And Codelco is one of the major investors that keeps tabs on copper, and copper looking to stay right about that for the foreseeable future going into next year. So save your pennies, guys, because, again, something stamped by the government like that is going to be recognizable after the fact if something does go bad. And maybe copper will come up in value, but maybe not. But, junk coins, those are things that you guys want to be saving right now. India has come out and dropped their 80-20 gold import restrictions. So this was a fairly surprise move that happened over the weekend. We had talked about them implementing this 80-20 import rule just last week, but the Indian government has now removed restriction on gold imports. And although generally positive for the gold market, it won't significantly change the overall bearish tone, according to some analysts. This is a story coming out of Kitco right now. So although the 80-20 rule has been curtained, the government did not mention whether it would reduce the 10% duty on gold imports. And again, with this and the Swiss referendum that just happened on Sunday, there's so much happening in the metals markets right now that I'm lost at this point because it's Monday. So we're going to, as I mentioned before, we'll talk to Ken about that in just a few seconds. But according to the London Bullion Market Association, the amount of gold transferred between accounts at the London Bullion Market Association members rose from October to November. The volume of gold ounces transferred daily increased by 7.6% month to month to 17.4 million ounces, which is the same level it was 12 months ago. The value of gold transferred increased by 6.2%, but the number of transfers fell by 30% to 3,148, its lowest level. So what exactly are they saying here is that they are saying that larger players are buying a lot more gold, but the number of transfers is way, way, way down. So what we're looking at is this, massacre in the gold market, driving prices down so the people who have the money are able to invest. And that's, in fact, exactly, according to the LBMA, what we're seeing right now. The number of transfers falling, but the value of gold coming way, way up. And also the number of ounces per transfer rising significantly to above 5,500. So are the big players out there snapping up gold as it's available? I think that that's definitely what's going on. I'm going to move beyond the economic stuff right now because, as I mentioned, Ken will be here in just a few. So I want to talk a little bit about health stuff going on. The flu vaccine right now in Italy, the death toll is 13. Okay. So a flu vaccine manufactured, by Novartis is killing people in Italy, and the death toll rising as of this morning to 13. According to reports from The Age, The News, and WashingtonToday.com, the deaths occurred within 48 hours of being administered the vaccine, according to the Italian health authorities, and they have now issued a partial ban on the vaccination batches believed to be causing the fatalities. Because flu vaccines are falsely assumed by the government to be 100% safe, despite the mounting evidence of their dangers and the fact that they contain toxic mercury, the global media usually ignores vaccination adverse effects and fatalities. Even this story covering the 13 fatalities dutifully carried a denial from the official government health authorities, saying the Italian Medical Association has warned against panic and stressed that there is no proof yet that the vaccination itself led to the deaths. But it's important to understand here that despite the presence of mercury and aluminum in a lot of the vaccines, the quantities of these metals typically is pretty unlikely to cause death within the first 48 hours after inoculation. So when people are actually killed by flu vaccines, it's far more likely explanation is that a serious quality control failure during the manufacture of the vaccine, which may not have introduced or might have introduced unusually high concentrations of toxic metals or deadly viral strains, which are not properly inactivated. So they're going on to say that it's either going to be a gross material control situation or a gross negligence situation. We also had, I want to say it was Pakistan earlier this summer, where a whole bunch of people were died because they were ostensibly supposed to be getting a vaccine, but they were not getting a vaccine. They were getting some other kind of medicine. So I guess we'll just have to keep an eye on that and see what happens going forward. There's been a huge new report on the benefits of lime juice. This actually surprised me quite a bit, but the National Library of Medicine indicated that lime juice itself could either cure or greatly accelerate healing time from a variety of life-threatening illnesses, talking about sickle cell anemia, talking about malaria, bacterial agents in food. Lyme disease can also be used to disinfect water. It is known to kill the norovirus. And also, Escherichia coli, subword I can't say. Sorry, guys. And it also kills pancreatic cancer. They've also even gone on to show that it can be used effectively as a smoking cessation aid. So it's actually just as effective in trial compared to Nicorette gum. So that's very interesting also. Smoking obviously being one of the largest causes of death on the planet and probably one of the most preventable. So again, in the news section today, you can go and do a little bit more research into the benefits of lime juice. Very interesting stuff. Also want to talk a little bit about a report that my good friends Aaron and Mel over at True Stream Media put together for this weekend, talking about the government admitting that the rotavirus vaccine can cause intussusception and has now added it to the injury compensation program. So because the Obama administration quietly announced plans for 3,400 plus new regulations last week just after the Ferguson erupted and just in time for the Thanksgiving holiday, a lot of what's actually going on in that rather long list was already has already been lost and pretty much forgotten at the moment that it was released. But one regulation worth mentioning has to do with the rotavirus vaccine and a condition called intussusception. Intussusception is a serious condition where part of the intestines slides into an adjacent part of the intestines, and it is most common abdominal emergency to hit kids under the age of 2. Usually the intestines become blocked, the results in veins becoming compressed, the intestine swells and blah, 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 gets very, very bad. And failure to catch this condition or possible misdiagnosis of the condition can lead to death. And babies under 1 year old are the most susceptible to intussusception. One of the 3,415 new rules, which probably should have been in place when the rotavirus vaccine was first being administered, officially added intussusception into the vaccine injury table for rotavirus vaccines under the National Vaccine Injury Compensation Program. A lot of people are unaware that we have a National Vaccine Injury Compensation Program, and I'll tell you, that's by design. They don't want anybody knowing the results of anybody who is affected negatively by vaccinations, obviously at the request of the people who produce the vaccinations, the largest lobby group in Washington, I might add. So that is why we don't hear much about the National Vaccine Injury Compensation Plan. But some changes to it have been made, and more indications that the vaccinations that we're getting probably not all that great for us, which is why I don't take any. I actually had an interesting conversation this weekend with a friend who finally went out and got his first flu shot because he didn't talk to me first. And that bummed me out, brother. Bummed me out. I hope he's okay, and I hope it wasn't whatever they're using in Italy right now. Anyways, moving on to some other interesting news. Studies have now shown that some of the most popular essential oils in current use, such as mint, ginger, lemon, grapefruit, jasmine, lavender, chamomile, thyme, rose, and cinnamon, researchers sought out to discover how these oils might combat cancer. And they did this by testing the antibacterial potency as well as the vitro toxicology against human cancer cells. The results were fairly startling. At a concentration of at about 0.2%, all of the essential oils were relatively affected at inhibiting both the prostate cancer cells and the lung cancer cells, with the exception of mint essential oil. Though when it came to the breast cancer cell lines, some of the oils were especially effective. Essential oils from cinnamon, thyme, chamomile, and jasmine were significantly potent against the breast cancer cell lines, offering the greatest protection. The breast cancer cells were mostly destroyed by all four of these oils, with chamomile killing up to 93% of them in vitro. Even more effective was the thyme oil, which led to a 97% kill rate. Unbelievable. It's important to understand here that these we are talking about in vitro tests, which means they were not studied in their normal biological context, but instead in a petri dish. But complementing the findings of this research, another study published by the journal Industrial Crops and Products found that chamomile oil harnesses powerful antioxidant properties. The research evaluating 11 essential oils, lavender, thyme, winter savory, rosemary sage, peppermint, French tarragon, bitter, and sweet fennel, found that Roman chamomile had the highest antioxidant activity. Very interesting stuff. I think the more we learn about essential oils and about God's medicine, the more we find that they really are the answer to most of our problems. So that is where I'm going to leave it for the health news today. There are a few other stories that I didn't get to. There are also a lot of tech stories that I didn't get to. Hong Kong is going to have sideways running magnetic elevators, ladies and gentlemen. Sideways running magnetic elevators. We gotta go to a 3-minute break. When we come back, we'll have Ben Shorkin on the show. We're gonna get into some economics and some more events. Keep it right here, guys. Just one quick 3-minute break. This is your day. Thank you guys being here.
Joe Joseph here for Truth Frequency Radio. According to allgov.com, since 9/11, a total of 238 Americans have died from a terrorist attack. That's 24 a year, making your chance of dying 1 in 625,000. Conversely, you have a 1 in 1,000 chance of becoming a victim of police brutality. Yet we spend trillions of dollars on the war on terror while militarizing an abusive police force. At TruthFrequencyRadio.com, we have a team of the very best personalities in independent media. A team that's dedicated to bringing you reliable and rock-solid news and information so you can arm yourself with knowledge and join the fight against worldwide oppression and tyranny. Truth Frequency Radio. News without the hate, hype, and fear.
Sounds good.
Okay, brother. I'll be back in about 2 minutes. So,
okay.
If you need any coffee or
Judith Baker was once a promising science student who dreamed of finding a cure for cancer. This exposé is an account of how she strayed from a path of mainstream scholarship to a life of espionage in New Orleans with Lee Harvey Oswald. In her narrative, she offers extensive documentation on how she came to be a cancer expert and what led to her involvement in the development of a biological weapon that Oswald was to smuggle into Cuba to eliminate Fidel Castro. Details on what she knew of Kennedy's impending assassination and her belief that Oswald was a deep cover intelligence agent who was framed for an assassination he was actually trying to prevent are also revealed. Me and Lee by Judith Baker. Special JFK 50th Anniversary Signed Limited Edition. $30 including shipping. Limited number of these available. Order your copy today at federaljack.com/store.
Sure am glad I tried that new Iodine Now microplant powder formulation.
You liked it, huh? I told you it would change your life.
Yeah, I feel fantastic and I have so much more energy.
Hi, I have your Iodine Now delivery.
Oh, yes, my second order arrived. Thank you so much.
Hey, buddy, why don't you ask this lady out for a date?
Good idea. Now that I'm taking Iodine Now, I have the energy to enjoy my life again.
It looks like you're getting back your old charm, buddy.
I'd love to go out to dinner with you. And can I try some of the Iodine Now?
Of course you can. You just delivered me a one-year supply.
Your future looks really great.
I finally agree with you.
Iodine Now, part of the Microplant Powder family. Microplant Powder is available in 15 different formulations. Call 888-910-4367 or visit the website to find the one that's right for you. And listen to our new audio descriptions for every product only at HitsUSA.org.
This is Truth Frequency Radio.
No hate, no hype, no fear. Real people, real radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. It is the first day of December, and right now it is 11 o'clock Central Time, and we are live. I've gotten some indication that many of you might have shared in my conversation with Ken over the break. For that, I apologize. I promise it wasn't on our end here. It's just the beauty of running a live radio show over Skype, ladies and gentlemen. So hope we kept it to a minimum for you guys. But again, my great pleasure to be welcoming Mr. Ken Shorkin Jr. to the show today. He is an avid contributor to the Daily Economist and also to roguemoney.net, which is where you can find V the Gorilla Economist also. And for those of you who don't know Ken, he is a historian in the primary field of his study and an investor in the real world. Kenneth has taken a perspective on all facets of the financial world. He's owned his own businesses and corporations. He's also been an investor in many different markets like securities, real estate, currency trading, investor in international trust, things like that. His desire, according to him, is to provide us with the true understanding of the markets and the economy and give us some information, help us make some decisions in these ridiculous times as we see them. Kenneth, thank you so much for taking time away from your busy schedule to join us on the Red Pill Reports today.
Thank you, JD. It's a pleasure to be here.
Is there anything else in your background that you think we should probably know about you before we get going, Ken?
Well, if anything, I'm not a certified financial planner, so I can't give financial advice to anyone.
Okay.
And my background is history, political science, and economics. And so what I try to do is take what's going on in the macro sense of the world's financial center,
mm-hmm.
and try to distill it down to what's important to people, what's something to look at for the paradigm change, et cetera, and then from there, people can then take that information and either make decisions on their own or go to somebody that they trust to make those decisions.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, V over Rogue Money has a lot of different outlets for people, especially as this world is changing, you know, the financial system from the West to the East.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm glad you mentioned the fact that you're not giving economic advice. I need to say that as well here at Red Pill Reports. You know, we're not economic advisors, so this is obviously for your education and entertainment purposes only. But Ken, to get a better idea of who you really are, I have to ask the question, are you one of these crazy people out there that thinks that shooting yourself 9 times in the back of the head with a nail gun is suspicious in any way? You're not one of those crazy people, are you?
Oh, of course I am.
Oh, okay.
because you don't have to be crazy to understand the logic.
Oh.
I mean, you know, the old saying, if it looks like a duck, smells like a duck, quacks like a duck, then obviously the Fed wants us to believe it's suicide. Yeah,
right.
Suicide.
Right.
No.
So let's talk about those things, because there's been a couple new ones just over the last week, right? We had the woman banker who apparently committed suicide by stabbing herself in the chest while out on a jogging trail. And then we had the other gentleman in the bathtub that decided the best way to take his own life would be to slit your own throat, which obviously top of my list when, you know, when I'm thinking about how I can spend my untold fortunes on easy way out, the slicing of my own throat, top of the list. What do you think about all that?
Well, interesting. The most recent one, and know this, there have been 19 publicly disclosed ones. Mm-hmm. But if for some of the people over at Rogue Money, V, with his inside information, knows that there's a lot more, like maybe between 40 and 200.
Oh, you're kidding.
Yeah, no. There's a lot of them that are not being publicized, or a lot of them are being considered coincidence and not worth mentioning.
Okay.
There's 19 primary ones that started back in December of last year with a journalist in the oil field. Uh-huh. And the most recent one was a Senior Vice President Melissa Milan with MassMutual out of Springfield, Massachusetts. Now, it's an insurance company. It could be coincidence, but supposedly she was they first thought she was hit and run.
Right.
Because she's an avid jogger and was out in Connecticut running, and then they find out she has a stab wound to the chest, and, well, then they've had to put it as a homicide.
Uh-huh.
So that one they can't put as suicide. The other one, the individual Sean Miller, Managing Director of Environmental and Social Risk Management at Citibank.
What a title.
Yeah. He had his throat slit,
mm-hmm.
and they found the knife eventually by the tub. Or actually, they thought they did, and then they didn't. So
it's
suddenly been ruling to more of a homicide than a suicide.
Okay.
So you're not going to get really the full scope of what's going on in the media, but the important thing is the question of why.
Uh-huh.
Why are these bankers dying? For the most recent ones, there's no real connection, but a lot of the ones that have previously died earlier this year, most of them are tied to one of two things. One, they're tied to the London whale scandal of a few years ago with JP Morgan.
Okay.
The others are tied to the fact that we're slowly starting to get regulators, mostly out of Germany, who are really starting to investigate this manipulation. This is why this year you have suddenly seen the LIBOR, the Forex, the gold and silver manipulation. All of these things are suddenly coming to the forefront when they've been going on since 2008 and then been hidden under the rug, because we finally have investigators out of Europe who are sick and tired of this, and they know that their own markets are being manipulated. So they are not succumbing to U.S. pressures, mm-hmm. and U.S. regulatory pressures, and they're actually going after banks. So much so that they, when they were about to bring charges against Deutsche Bank, Deutsche Bank said, okay, we're out, and they sold their seat on the London gold fix.
Right.
And said, we're done. J.P. Morgan sold their commodity desk, and nobody really wants to buy it.
Mm-hmm.
Or Goldman Sachs divested themselves out of a commodities desk. The banks are trying to get out of here just as the pressure of indictment is coming down.
So we're essentially seeing infighting now as the struggle for power is starting to get closer and closer to the top, you think?
Well, what it is these middle managers know all the secrets.
Okay.
And before that, the regulators can pull them in and subpoena them and get them under oath, they're dying with, you know, dead men tell no tales.
Right, right.
So this is what's happening. The high-end people in the banks, J.P. Morgan, Goldman Sachs, Deutsche Bank, HSBC, they're making sure that those who have the knowledge and potentially could bring them down are being silenced.
Wow. That is frightening. I mean, that's really frightening to think about all these people with all this money who have spent all this time, you know, harboring these secrets now with their lives on the line. It's remarkable to me to see what's going on in the world in terms of that. I want to turn our attention, though, obviously, to the Swiss referendum that failed spectacularly over the weekend. There's been a lot of turmoil in the gold markets. I'm wondering if you have some insight on what that referendum means and what we can expect to see out of gold and silver going forward, you know, as a result of it, if there is going to be a result from it.
Yeah, the primary thing behind the Swiss gold referendum is as people may have been noticing, there is a massive pull to repatriate their gold. Mm-hmm. Now, when central banks start talking about this or governments start talking about this, we have, you know, first it was Venezuela. Go back about four years. And Hugo Chavez, when he was still alive, he demanded his gold be repatriated from the New York vaults and the Fed and brought back to Venezuela. Well, shortly after, he dies of poison.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have Germany. There was a lot of public outcry demanding gold back, and a few legislators, central bank did not want to do it, but they were overwhelmed by the groundswell, you know, what I call the Ron Paul syndrome.
Right.
finally getting that groundswell enough that you can make some political change. So they demand their gold back, and the Fed has leased it all out. They have no gold.
Right.
And so they made this lie that says, oh, well, we have it, but we can't ship it back to you within 7 years. And during the first year, they're supposed to get, let's see, they've got 640 around that tons of gold as stored at the Fed, and then they've got others at New York and I think in French banks. And the gold, they only got 5 tons back.
Wow.
They're supposed to get an average of about, what, 43 tons for the first year? Seven years, that's 640. Yeah, they only got 5 tons back.
Wow.
Now, because they have no gold, all of a sudden we have certain things, like the Fed and New York and London are stealing Saudi Arabian gold.
Wait, how? What do you mean with that? I haven't heard about that.
Here's something that came over the weekend from... I believe it was, I can't remember the source. It may have been James, the Russian analyst, or another source that I was hearing.
Okay.
But you remember a couple years ago when the U.S. tried to do the big, we've got to get these offshore accounts because they're not paying taxes.
Yes, yes.
And
yes.
Demand these account names from Swiss banks.
Yeah, I do remember that.
Primarily UBS.
Right.
What really good is it for the U.S. to go through all this, to get all these account holder names, to get maybe $40 million per year in taxes that were evaded?
Right, and that's, I mean, $40 million is like a rounding error for these people nowadays.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So there's got to be something behind it. Well, there is, because UBS then, when they finally capitulated to the U.S., that's where UBS and Credit Suisse are the two places where most of the Saudi, Qatar, UAE gold is stored.
Oh.
And once the Swiss banks were fully locked into the U.S. Dominion and authority, then all of a sudden they just opened themselves up and all that gold started being taken because they need to keep the dollar propped up. And this is what many of the mechanisms that are going on today is keep the dollar system going and the reserve currency system going for as long as possible until they can siphon all of the wealth from the middle class all the way to the top, to the 1%. And then they're going to allow it to collapse. And then they're going to try to be the arbiters of the new global financial system.
Right.
Well, the problem is that Russia and China and India and the BRICS aren't going to go by, you know, silently in this. Mm-hmm. So this is why we're having the proxy war. This is part of the reasons for Ukraine. This is part of the reasons why the U.S. is trying to drive out the ruble, drive down the ruble, mm-hmm. by lowering oil prices. This is why all of these different things, the sanctions, are meant to try to get Russia to capitulate and fall back under U.S. hegemony.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, and I guess I want to pause for just a second and ask about, there was an article from, I want to say it was Blacklisted News, so it's kind of one of those stories that, you know, we can't necessarily corroborate, but eventually Zero Hedge came and the leaders of Ukraine came and said that their gold reserves were way, way down. But the initial report from Blacklisted was that there was some kind of secret nighttime activity where, you know, a plane landed and a bunch of gold from Ukraine was essentially loaded up and stolen. Do you know anything about that incident?
Oh, yeah. I wrote my own article on that.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, when it occurred, and V has already verified it, and a number of other sources, Jim Willey. What ended up happening was, right after the coup, when they were doing by the way, the prime minister, he goes by the term Yats. I think his name is Yatskunstuk or something like that.
Okay.
But his name is he's a former Goldman Sachs central banker out of Europe.
Oh, you're joking.
No, when they take over countries with technocrats like Mario Monti, who took over for Berlusconi in Italy, mm-hmm. and I think it's Rajoy in Spain. These guys were central bankers from the ECB, all worked for Goldman Sachs.
Wow.
The takeover of Europe is by technocrats, the intellectuals who are not elected by the people who think they can run things better than you. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's what the New World Order is based on, a small oligarchy of intellectuals who think that they can run your lives better than you.
Mm-hmm. I would agree with that.
So anyway, what happened in Ukraine was, overnight, once they had taken over Kiev, as Jim Willie says, and this is Jim Willie words, Langley boys, Blackwater, the other military, went in and just confiscated 40 tons and took it out overnight.
Wow. Any idea where that went? Did that come back to the States?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it went to London or New York, mm-hmm. and they leased it out. Or they used it to pay off maybe Germany under the table.
Right.
But here's the interesting thing. Holland suddenly came out last week and announced that they had repatriated 122 tons of gold from New York. Well, why can they do that in a day if New York couldn't give Germany back their gold?
Good question.
Well, what is the significance of the Dutch in the whole Ukrainian fiasco?
Oh, well, they're now going to be, they're probably lead investigator on the whole MH17 debacle, right?
They do.
Yeah.
They have the black box,
mm-hmm.
and of course they've gone full investigation because there was a number of Dutch passengers on that flight.
So they have leverage, I guess, would be the correct
and
answer to that.
That's what the belief is right now. The rumor is that they know the truth behind MH17. They've heard the black box. They know that it was either done by the Ukrainians or done by, U.S. Langley boys or whoever,
right,
as a way to try to vilify Russia. And so they held over and said, you know what, we will report this to the world unless you give us our gold back. Whoop, gold comes in like a day.
Wow. That's remarkable what leverage will do for a country like, like this. Wow, that's amazing.
Exactly.
Unreal. Well, and I guess I wanted to talk a little bit also about, since we're on the subject of Ukraine, did you write an article this last week about the nationalization of the gas pipelines, Russia's gas pipelines on the eastern side of Ukraine?
It was just one.
Just one, okay.
And there was a significance to this, okay. You've got to remember that the Russian oil companies and the Russian gas companies are all being looked at and are being sanctioned by the West.
Right.
Okay. Over Ukraine. So Ukraine is at least the Kiev government is trying to hang out in NATO and the EU and U.S.'s camp,
mm-hmm.
to go along with those sanctions. Well, there was a commercial pipeline that goes across Ukraine into Hungary, provides, really it's a very small pipeline. I mean, it extends a long way, but what's pumped there is really minimal. So it's more of a symbolic thing,
okay.
But you have to look at where the gas goes to. It goes to Hungary, and what is Hungary's role in this? Hungary is working with Russia to build the South Stream pipeline that goes through Hungary, going west into Europe.
Okay,
bypassing Ukraine. So what the Ukraine Supreme Court did is they held up on appeal that we can nationalize this because. Russia's Transneft company put labeled the transaction, the joint partnership of this pipeline, under a different name and holding company. And so the Ukrainian Supreme Court is saying, well, it was illegal. It should have been under Transneft. You can't call it under something else because you're using that other name to bypass sanctions, yada, yada, yada. A spurious legal loophole to try to make claim to this. Well, Ukraine may win a political victory in this, but it's sort of meaningless to Russia because you know, they can get natural gas and oil to Hungary from a different way. But what it's going to do, of course, is it's going to just increase the tensions between the U.S. and Russia. And Russia may do something interesting that will really blow this whole thing out of, you know, with the fact that the ruble's going down. Russia has been importing gold by the boatload.
Yes, they have. Mm-hmm.
Last quarter, I think it was 57 tons. They're using whatever, you know, they're willing to have a little bit of inflation in their economy. They're willing to go through their currency being devalued and not worry about it. They're not cutting their oil production. Mm-hmm. What they're doing is they're taking all their money and buying gold because they're planning for the long term. The fiat currency system, and especially the system run by the U.S. and the West, is going to collapse. They don't know when, but it's going to be inevitable, and it's going to be fairly soon.
Right.
So what they're doing is they're preparing for the new system. Because here's the thing, like with China. China's been telling all their citizens to buy gold and silver.
Uh-huh.
Well, what happens if all of a sudden the new Shanghai Gold Exchange wrests price discovery of gold and silver from the COMEX, which is only a paper market? They have not actually delivered metal for the futures contracts in over 2 years. They're completely paper now. They're a worthless futures market. But what if the Shanghai Gold Exchange suddenly rests price discovery and says, hey, you know the revalue of gold? It's $7,000 to $50,000.
Wow.
Okay? Mm-hmm. That's the real price of gold. Mm-hmm. What happens to all their citizens who suddenly have been buying gold and silver over the past 2 years?
Well, then they're all
they're first. Instantly elevated to the middle class.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
And this is why it was so important when you see the dollar devaluing, when you see all of this debt starting to accumulate. 2008 was a signal to everybody with, you know, 100 point IQ. The system is changing. You cannot do things the same debt-based Keynesian way that you've done for the last 50 years. You need to prepare for the transition. Mm-hmm. Right now, we've had from 2008 to 2014, going into 2015, we've had a 6-7 year transition. Less than 1% of the Americans hold gold, physical gold and silver.
Right.
And when the dollar collapses, they're going to sit there and go, and lose everything, just as happened in the 1920s or the 1930s after the stock market crash, and we had massive deflation, the banks all closed, and people lost everything.
Mm-hmm.
And people, of course, talk about the fact that, well, you know, the U.S. government come and confiscate. The U.S. government is not going to come and confiscate. They didn't go door-to-door in 1932 or 1933. They're not going to go door-to-door now. Okay. If you're stupid enough to keep it in banks and safety deposit boxes, yeah, you'll lose it.
Right, right. But getting physical into your own hands right now is super-duper-duper important. And we had an article this morning talking about how the overall orders for gold right now are actually down, but the quantity of the orders in terms of what people are actually ordering is significantly higher. Like the increase in the amount, people are buying 5,000 ounces at a time instead of only 1,000 ounces, but there are less people purchasing, which makes me believe that obviously this knocking of the price down was in order for them to get out while the getting out was good and to get into something with real value to it, you know?
Yeah, you know, the COMEX is a paper market, and it's done for one thing only. It's to protect the derivative market.
Right.
Okay, once price discovery gets wrested from the COMEX, you are going to see an instant collapse, not because necessarily of gold and silver or the dollar, but because of the quadrillion in derivatives. And those derivatives that are tied to interest rates, those derivatives tied to gold and silver and commodities, those interest rates tied to the dollar, to the bonds, to the treasuries, all this stuff will come collapsing down. I mean, it is just, if you think the mafia was brutal in back in the day, in the Godfather day of how it dealt with business, we have no idea how corrupt the banking system is. Think about it as just high-priced mafia, because that's exactly right. What they are.
Right. Well, and how?
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Oh no, I was done with my train of thought.
I'm curious also how the oil prices are playing into this, because obviously, you know, I'm looking at crude right now. It's below $70. I know 70 was a pretty big psychological barrier for the market. And I'm curious about what your thoughts are about OPEC, you know, not slowing production this week on Thanksgiving at their meeting, and how this lowering of oil prices is going to affect the commodity markets and affect the economy overall. Because it seems to me like this oil thing really plays into a lot of arena. I mean, it plays into Russia, it plays into Venezuela, obviously plays into the battle waging between Saudi Arabia and ISIS right now. So could you help us get our minds around what's going on with oil and how that's going to change things going forward?
Right. If people remember back in 2009 when we had the Great Recession, mm-hmm. what did oil prices do? They went from a high of 2008 during the great bubble of $145 per gallon or per barrel down to $35 per barrel.
Right.
In the midst of the recession, okay, that means there's that economic growth and the economy was flat or declining. When you see oil prices do their slow decline from, I think it was about 108, maybe about 2-3 months ago, mm-hmm. and now it's super, super fast going down, it's because the world is in recession. It's in deflation. In a time of deflation, there is complete decline in asset prices. You got to look at what Europe did. Europe came out, and there are at least three or four countries that are in negative growth GDP, and Germany is only had a 0.1%, a tenth of a percent growth in their GDP.
Oh, wow.
The entire Europe, especially this year because of sanctions, is in massive recession. They're not going to come out in the mainstream. No, we are on the point that the EU is on the edge and the Euros are there on the edge of dissolution. Britain is ready to move out. Activists from Italy, what is his name? Beppe Grillo, who is a fantastically popular activist who has a political party, he's ready to pull Italy out and start, you know, go back to the lira and get out of the euro.
Right.
All of these. Germany has 6,000 companies that do direct business with Russia. What do you think the sanctions are doing them? France is on the point of revolution again. The French farmers who sold a lot of their agriculture, which now they can't because of the sanctions to Russia, they had some of their farmers in a co-op take this huge dump truck full of manure and dump it right on the legislative buildings.
Wow. They know how to protest there, I'll tell you what.
It used to be they would dump potatoes, but now they're going straight to the manure. So the world is going into the, you know, the big difference is everybody likes to point out, especially in the West, is, oh, look at China. China is declining in growth. They're slowing down. What's the difference between U.S. and China when it comes to their debt?
Not much.
There's one big thing.
What is it?
Half of the U.S.'s $18 trillion debt is held by foreigners. China's debt is completely internal. They can erase it in a moment's notice and revalue the yuan.
Hmm.
But the U.S. cannot afford to do anything with the dollar because of all the foreign bondholders of treasuries.
Right, right.
Who would come back and just instantly, you know, dump them on and collapse the economy. So the U.S. can sit there and they have the power as a reserve, holding reserve currency to print as much money as they want.
Well, okay, we've got to go take a quick 3-minute break. When we come back, we'll be once again joined by Mr. Ken Shortkin, and we will continue this conversation about economic and geopolitical stuff. And we'll talk a little bit about a book that he has written recently, too, called The Israel Deception. Very, very good stuff. Thank you all for being here. We'll be back in 3 minutes. This is your Daily Dose of E-Programming. Keep it right.
So, you want the news and information without the hate, the hype, the fear. Well, you've come to the right place. You can support Truth Frequency Radio by spreading the word on social networking sites like Facebook, Twitter, or your favorite forums. Want to take Truth Frequency Radio on the road? Listen on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or other mobile devices. Want more than just the free stuff? Sign up for a VIP membership for as little as $4 a month and get super high-quality downloads, member-only content, and instant access to your favorite shows without the wait. It's only through your loving support that we're able to cover the cost and continue broadcasting. So now, stay tuned for more Free Speech Radio, right here on the Truth Frequency Radio Network. KTFRN. Worldwide.
time and time again.
You need to come here and help us. We need assistance. Please.
Those we should be able to depend on let us down.
Federal and state and local officials saying help is on the way. Well, the folks here in Bell Harbor say show me.
Don't depend on the government to save you. Take action now so that you're prepared for the next disaster with MyPatriotSupply.com. Get the best prices on storable food, non-GMO seeds, water filtration devices, home canning equipment, survival and self-reliance books, and more at MyPatriotSupply.com. Call 866-229-0927.
We are hurting down here, and we need help immediately.
Before it's time to survive, it's time to prepare. MyPatriotSupply.com. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Since our founding in 2005, we at YouTube have continually strived to bring you the best possible video experience on the internet. But now, we're updating YouTube to make it even better and give our users more of what they want. Introducing YouTube Plus, the new and improved version of YouTube. We're bringing a whole bunch of great new additions to YouTube. First of all, we're leveling the playing field by entirely removing subscriptions. You know how we've been phasing out subscriptions and making them less and less important by taking them off your home screen? Well, now subscriptions are non-existent. Everyone is equal. YouTubers that put in hours and hours of effort to make quality videos will be at the same level as 12-year-old Call of Duty gamers and video bloggers. Now you might be asking, how do I know what to watch now? Well, now your home screen is going to be filled with videos we think you'll like. Did you accidentally click on a My Little Pony video once? Well, now your home screen is going to be filled with videos just like that.
YouTube Plus. We owe 99% of the content creators.
Evil contains within it the seed of its own destruction.
Truth Warrior with David Whitehead. Mondays on Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. It is bottom of the hour. We're moving into the second live hour with our guest, Ken Shorten Jr. today. Cannot thank him enough for being here. And I would like to encourage all of you guys to go check out his postings at thedailyeconomist.com, also secretsofthefed.com, and finally roguemoney.net. A lot of good contributions being made at the Examiner also by Mr. Ken Shorten Jr., and so we are very excited to have some of his insight into the economy today. Ken, when we were going to the break, we were talking about oil prices, and we were talking about essentially what I feel like your position is that essentially that the drop in the oil prices is natural market stuff. It's just an indication that the economy is not going as well as the mainstream media would like us to believe that it is. But there's a lot of conjecture out there that Saudi Arabia is trying to either defund ISIS or potentially that OPEC and the United States have joined forces to try and put some hurt on Russia or Venezuela. Do you feel like there are any of those other geopolitical activities that are going on also that are causing the fall of oil to happen?
Oh, no, you're absolutely right. I mean, the entire thing is geopolitical. And the entire thing is oil. You know, contrary to what we have about the reserve currency, the dollar, the petrodollar, the true money of the world is energy, pure and simple. Uh-huh. That's what speaks to all nations, all industries, all economies. With that being said, the first thing is that Russia is the world's largest seller of oil. They're not the world's largest producer. That's the United States. But they're the world's largest seller of oil. Okay, so since their primary economy is based on oil, that is what the U.S., under what is known as the Wolfowitz Doctrine, it's an old Cold War, that came slightly after the Cold War, where when the Soviet Union fell, Wolfowitz decided that the United States should be the only superpower and that they would beat down any nation that starts to rise to become an equivalent or an adversary.
Okay.
And this is why the U.S. has been the policeman of the world. This is one of their primary reasons to keep any nation economy, military, et cetera, from potentially becoming an equal to the United States,
mm-hmm.
you know, the empire. Well, what they've done is, so they've gone after the ruble, they've gone after oil prices, but unfortunately, the Saudis are the real slick oil, you know, oil snake salesmen.
Right.
They play both sides of the fence.
Mm.
There was a secret deal that was done between Washington and the Saudis about two and a half months ago that was focused on going after Russia and the oil prices. You know, pretty much the United States was saying, hey, you know, Russia's your competitor. If you want to take them down, then you can still be, king oil out of OPEC.
Right.
Well, Saudi was like, okay, we can do this. But in the meantime, the Saudis have been having a monthly meeting in Beijing, and they've also been having. Do you remember the incident where the Saudi prince was carjacked in Paris?
No.
A few months ago?
No. Uh-uh.
Yeah, there were eight gunmen, professionals, that hijacked a Saudi prince in his car and with his entourage, who were on their way to the airport. And what they did was, in the news it said that they stole 250,000 euros, but there were some confidential documents. That's what they wanted.
Ah, okay.
The confidential documents were actually secret meetings that the Saudis were having with Russia over oil and how to potentially start selling oil in currencies other than the dollar.
Ooh.
And the U.S. did not want this to happen, obviously, because once the petrodollar goes down and once the dollar is no longer the reserve currency, the U.S. economy is completely done, worthless, because everybody will ship back all their $9 trillion worth of treasury bonds and debt. Nobody will accept the dollar, and we don't have any gold, and we don't have anything to back it up, so we'll be toast. That's what everybody's waiting for.
Right.
Well, the Saudis play both sides of the fence. They said, okay, we'll go along with you and bring down oil prices. We'll stop delivery. But then they saw as the prices start to go down, they said, you know what? Russia is not really our biggest competitor. You are, U.S. You're the biggest producer.
Right.
So what we're going to do is we're not going to cut supply. We're going to keep prices going down, and we're going to destroy the shale industry, which has to have $80 or higher oil to be viable.
Wow.
And if they keep the prices down in the 60s or even the 70s for an extended period of time, the U.S. shale is gone.
Wow. What's that going to do, though, to the country if we lose our shale industry?
What other industry do we have now?
Well, we have got
oil export. Oil export. Well, we've always been a consumer-based economy in the last 50 years, but oil is our biggest export. If we lose oil as our biggest export and we have nothing else to ship, more cars are being built and sold from China than in the U.S. these days. Can you believe that?
Yeah, I can believe that. Yeah.
And most of the Asian conglomerates, especially if you saw what was going on at AECP and the G20 over in Brisbane a few weeks ago, the U.S. is being ostracized. Who is it at the AE? It's either the AECP or AEPP meeting. The big picture that they had with all the world leaders, Obama was standing in with the wives. And China was in the middle, and Russia was right next to him.
Wow.
And then, of course, you know, since the U.S. runs the G20 still, Obama was in the main picture, but China was in the middle again.
Wow.
It's recognition, even by the G20 and by Asia, that China is the number one economy in the world, pure and simple.
Hmm.
And if you're the number one economy in the world, why should you have this number two economy in the world controlling the reserve currency?
Right.
Well, so this is all about the dollar. Mm-hmm. This is like Obama's immigration thing. Why did Obama rush this immigration thing through? Immediately after the American people shot down the Democrats and his policies after that, because it has nothing to do with immigration.
Right.
It's another Fed tool to save the dollar.
Mm, and how does that work?
Well, I'm not sure the whole mechanics of it, but there's an investor. He works in the housing industry, has hundreds of millions of dollars worth of real estate that he works with. Mm-hmm. Big insider in the banking industry. His name is Greg Mannarino. Mm-hmm. And he was in an interview recently. He says, it's clear to me that the Fed is and central banks are desperate to find anything, especially now the QE is done, to keep keep the markets going.
Right.
And one of these things is what Obama just did in regards to immigration reform. This is a dollar propping up mechanism. People need to understand this is all about our debt-based economic model. The mechanism absolutely requires that we come up with more and more reasons to borrow cash into existence.
Yes.
So by bringing in 5 million or validating 5 million or more immigrants, we now have a reason to print more money and keep it going.
Yes. I would take it a step further from that, and it really fundamentally, in my understanding, you know, the thing that floats our fiat currency is the promise of your time, talent, and energy, which is honestly the only thing of value on the planet. So by bringing in 5 million new people, you can then, just like you said, you can take out loans because there's going to need to be EBT loans. There's, you know, think about what the bottom line for Walmart on this is going to be. I mean, they're, I think 40% of their revenue is generated by people who are on assistance programs. So I would imagine that a lot of these people who are coming in are going to be put right into those programs. Major boon to the economy, major propping up of the dollar. I think that's pretty straightforward.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's why you're seeing from Congress, they're jawboning their opposition, but they're not going to do anything.
Right.
Boehner has already come out this weekend and said he's not going to do anything.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, so I do want to get onto your book, but I have one other economic question, just because we've been talking about so much economy. Can you just give us quickly your impression of Bitcoin? What do you think about Bitcoin?
Well, I think Bitcoin is Bitcoin. Like I said before, Bitcoin reminds me of the Ron Paul revolution. There are millions of people who are tired and have woken up to the fiat-based system, the central bank system that is pretty much it's controlled Europe since the 1700s, and it's controlled the U.S. and the global thing since 1913.
Right.
They're looking at a way that they can have some form of money, because really, what is money? Back in the day, 5,000 years ago, there were islands that were using shells as money.
Right.
Money is simply this, an idea backed by confidence. And this is what a fiat currency they try to use, that the government, you know, confidence backed by the confidence of the U.S. government. Well, Bitcoin, because of its confidence in the algorithm and the electronic use and its secure protection, the fact that it's fungible and divisible, and that it fills all the requirements of money, more and more people are accepting this. Now, once you start getting more and more businesses to do it, that's when we're going to really see, you know, an explosion on it. But the problem is that the Fed is going to protect its own. They laughed off Bitcoin when early on in the few days, but the New York courts and the New York courts are tied to Wall Street.
Right.
They've already come out that said Bitcoin is a investment. It's not a currency.
Right.
So any business owner who accepts Bitcoin is suddenly going to have to pay capital gains taxes on it each and every time there's a transaction. And that's how the centralized government is getting away from people using it widespread.
Right.
It's going to work in Africa, in Europe, in other places, but until the central bank system in the U.S. is really destroyed, then it's not going to get as much foothold as it really should because of regulators.
Copy that. Are you a holder of Bitcoin, just personally?
No.
No? Okay. Roger that. Fair, good, sound advice. Sound economic advice. Okay, let's step away from economy for just a second, because you've written a book that I got to read most of last night, and it was actually very, very interesting. But it's called The Israel Deception. You can find it, ladies and gentlemen, at thedailyeconomist.com. You can find a link to order this book. Ken, what in the world got you so interested in the history of Israel that you decided to write a book about it?
Well, see, for me, I'm a Christian, a believer, but I don't believe in the church system, and I don't believe in the religiosity of Christianity.
Okay.
It was always supposed to be a direct relationship with God, and that's the way it was with the covenant, you know, the Jewish covenant, the Abrahamic covenant. I will be your God, and you will be my people. That's the way it was always supposed to be. And I was always a believer because I bought into the line that, you know, the return of Israel was by God, and we're all supposed to do this. But as I got really deeper into my relationship with God, I suddenly started asking the questions. If Jesus delivered this new covenant, you know, the kingdom of God and the access and all these things, then why are people so enamored about going back under the law, under the old covenant, under Israel. There's almost a worship in, holding Israel up as an idol by Christians who have moved over to the new covenant. Well, then I started looking in and started asking all these questions. And I did it not from a hatred of Israel or is this wrong, but I started looking at what were the covenants, what did they mean, and I started looking at the history of it. And so I had to pose three questions, and these were the foundations I started with.
Okay.
Are Jews, the descendants of Israel, to converted Jews, who were converted in the of the line of Israel or of Abraham, those who follow Torah versus those who follow the Pharisaic Judaism that came out of Babylon in the 1st to 3rd century AD. And then finally, what is God's righteousness over what is our interpretation of Scripture? Because if you think of, if God had intended the Bible to be the sole foundation, then why has there been over 35,000 denominations or divisions created, millions of doctrines, millions of church leaders who all believe different things, all coming from their interpretation of this book? So I really went down and I started looking. There's a lot of people involved in prophecy, involved in interpretations, that what they do is they have their, they already have their established worldview. I believe this.
Right.
And so they pick and choose Bible verses that fit that mold of what. So I set myself the original foundations and I started looking. I wanted to write something that is both, here's what the Bible says, and also to the seculars and the non-Christians, here's the history shows about the creation of Israel. And running through, what I found is that Titus came in 70 AD and destroyed the temple, held all the Jews. Many of them went into Babylon in the 1st to 3rd centuries.
Okay.
Well, it was Pharisees, the same ones that in the Bible Jesus said are wicked for their iniquity, in their image. It was no longer the Torah and the law. It was something called Talmudic Judaism that was supplemented with books known as the Zohar, the Kabbalah, the Mishnah, and the Mishnah. And between the 3rd century and 8th century AD, what ended up happening was fading north after the things got solidified more in Europe. Some of them went to the Iberian Peninsula, France, Portugal, Spain, and became the Sephardic Jews.
Okay.
Others went east in the Balkans, Khazaria. Now, the importance about Khazaria is this. The Khazaria is now, we know it as Georgia. In the 8th century, 9th century, were converted to this new Judaism, not to the old Torah and law.
Okay.
The reason this is important is because in the 6th century, would come out of Khazaria by the name of Ba and move into Europe, and they later changed their name. And this is why those who have always declaimed, oh, the Jews are, but they're not blood Jews. Ashkenazi, and you may have heard the term Ashkenazi, it's converted Jews to religion. And it's really interesting because in Revelation, there is, between chapters 1 and 3, there are 7 letters to the angels over the church. It actually doesn't say to the church itself. It says to the angels.
Okay.
Who are residing in the throne room. These are directed at them. They have a purpose. They're angels that are over the 7 eras of the church from the time of Yeshua's to his return and the end of the church era. Same way there were 7 eras exile to the new covenants or the old covenants, et cetera. Chapter, which represents between 100 AD and 300, when the Romans at Nicaea. It says in there, so the letter to Smyrna, it says, are you who call yourselves Jews but are not, but are the synagogue of Satan.
Oof, okay.
They knew that the belief and teachings of God would, during that era of 100 to 300 AD.
Hmm.
And this is exactly what happened during that time in Babylon. Okay. So right there, God was saying that everything that was Jewish is now a plan of Satan. Complete prostitution of the law and of Torah. Now, what ended up happening was that carried over by the rock in the late 80s. Rothschild had gotten some new oil deposits in the Caspian base of operations to do this. Got with a Ashkenazi Jew by the name of Thomas Herzl College in 1897, or Zionist Congress.
Okay.
Now, the interesting thing about Zionist Congress is it has nothing to do with Judaism and politics.
Oh, okay.
Because people think that former Iranian president stupid and an anti-Semite and a Jew hater.
Right.
But if you look at all of his speech, references the Jews. In Iran, Jews live and work and prosper today. Staunch Muslim country. Because it's not been the real Jews that have been the problem. It's been the Zionists.
Right.
October 13, 2010. We oppose the occupation and aggression of the crimes committed by the Zionist enemy. Let me see here. Here's another one. The question is, why the Holocaust be examined further? Is it incorrect to force only one view on the rest of the world when there's so much sensitivity? This up is because I want to read a Thomas Herzl. Let me see if I can find it real quick. He said this is from the. It's essential that the sufferings of the verse. This will assist us in realization of our plans. I shall induce anti-Semites to liquidate. Semites will assist us thereby in the oppression of Jews. The anti-Semites will be our best friends.
Whoa.
Who started Zionism, the Zionist movement, and the creation of modern-day Israel, and advocated the Holocaust.
Right. Wow.
Okay. From his own diary. Mm-hmm. Take a look at it. Here's something else. This is on the colony. The Jews from the colony set up by in Palestine. Child. 1901. If you wish to save the yeshiva, which is. First, take your hands off it. For once, we permit the colonists to have the possibility of correcting things for themselves. Better. Rothschild angrily wrote back and stated, I created the.
Wow.
I alone. Therefore, no men, neither colonists nor organizations, have the right to interfere.
And what year was that?
This is after the start of the Zionist Congress, when he started sending. Down to Palestine, which is what the land was called, to prepare for when they would state under the Pharisaic Judaism, Judaism given by this and the people.
Right.
So this whole thing of Israel in advance by Rothschild for a specific purpose.
That's just amazing. I mean, that is just amazing.
And hate the Jews in the area. They hate the fact that they know they're not stupid. They know that this a political party known as the Zionist Congress and turmoil going on in the Middle East, because Palestine Empire before World War I the Jews, the Muslims, the Christians under the empire.
Right.
And one of the reasons for World War One was to break up the, to create the nation states that we see today, Syria, Iran, Iraq, etc., so that they could be easily taken over, controlled. Rather than, you know, you can't control an entire nation states.
Right.
And by breaking it up, which they did under the Balfour Act, it allowed a state, which eventually was done after World War II.
Well, and there's indications now, if you go and look, that this whole splitting up of Iraq, you know, they're trying to, essentially Israel has been leading the charge to split Iraq up since the early 1980s into, you know, the Shiite, Sunni, and then the Kurdish areas at the north. So still, we're seeing that same agenda being played out in the Middle East right now.
Well, and, you know, in the book, besides the historical view that I just gave, asking the question, why is it that Christians, who are supposed to be focused on the new covenant, are back to the old? Created the messianic movement, where they put themselves back under the law. So I started looking in the Bible, and I took a few hours, and I said, what scriptures are all of these prophetic prophecy people claiming to validate the return of Israel in the 20th century? And I started breaking down not only the words, but the whole context, the entire chapter, the entire realization that was validated. You know, they say when it comes from the mouth of three witnesses, then it is validated.
Okay.
I found three prophets that in their own words, in their own writings, said that there would be a not before the return of Christ or the Messiah, but after.
Really?
Israel is supposed to come in the second coming and the millennial kingdom. It's never supposed to come by God's word or God's hand before that.
Wow.
Come before that, which we have in 1947, and we know the people behind it. Who does it benefit? Does it benefit God or does it benefit the adversary?
Right.
And that's the question I pose with this book. Evidence, both secular and biblical, and leave it for the reader to decide on their own.
Well, I find that to be very fascinating, and I think that's a subject that most people are afraid to touch, and I'm glad that you have taken the opportunity to write a book about it, and I highly recommend everybody go and check out The Daily Economist right now, and you can find that copy of that book there for sale. Ken, we are just about out of time. Are there any closing thoughts that you would like to leave us with for the day?
For those who are Rogue Money, site, you know, you can see whatever articles I write, but rather than worry about the secrets of the Fed and the exam, go to thedailyeconomist.com. On the middle side, I post links to all my articles. On the right side, if you go down, it are articles, so you can find them all at one.
Very good, very good. Well, Ken, I appreciate you joining us today. I think that was a wonderful conversation. I look forward to having you back in the future. I hope you have a wonderful rest of your day. Thank you again for joining us at the Red Pill Reports broadcast for today.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the time.
Absolutely. Thank you for being here. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we are just about out of time for the day. I hope you enjoyed some of the economic insight that Ken brought us. Tomorrow, we're going to be speaking with Doreen Hannes, and we'll have her on for a whole hour this time. So we'll get into a lot of what the barriers are to our own self-sufficiency. I hope you guys stay tuned for that tomorrow. It should be a very good discussion. Appreciate you guys being here, and we will talk to you tomorrow. Take care, everybody. This has been your daily dose of deprogramming. My name is Jay.
The Apple's iPhone 5S has been very successful in the US, but we realize that people here in India cannot afford the iPhone. That's why we've decided to work closely with the Apples to bring the iPhone experience to India. We call it the iPhone 5X. The iPhone 5X was built with advanced new hardware. The phone runs on the new Apple's A10 Snapdragon 7870 HD 2-liter turbo Galaxy 29 GHz processor. Our advanced operating system features some of the best apps out there. We have classics such as Instant Gram, Samosa Crush Saga, World of Duty, Call of Warcraft, and Temple Run, in which you get to run from an actual mob of Hindu priests.
And to wrap it all up, we have 24/7 customer service lines in case you idiots need help with your new iPhones.
Hello, welcome to iPhoney Tech Support. This is Ben Katesh.
Are you sure you're not one of those outsourced white people?